Matt Walsh, welcome. It's great to have you on the Neil Larson Show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you're one of these guests that we have a hard time introducing because there's so many titles we could put to you: blogger, Blaze contributor, now author. But we do want to talk about your book, The Unholy Trinity: Blocking the Left's Assault on Life, Marriage, and Gender. And maybe talk about what this is your debut book. This is the first book that you've published. And talk about what led to you deciding this is what I want to publish about.
Well, I think it ties together a lot of the themes that I've been writing about for a while before I started on the book. And when it comes, I try to write on a whole host of topics, but when it comes down to it, I mostly try to engage on these cultural issues, what we call now the so-called social issues. And it has always appeared to me that the three primary battlegrounds of the culture war are life, marriage, and gender. And it's this kind of three-pronged attack that the left has waged to redefine human life, marriage, and gender that should be the focus of conservatives and Christians. I mean, this is where we need to be, as I said, engaged and fighting. So that's why I wrote the book on those subjects.
Matt, you talk about how very important this is. In fact, you use your Catholic background to discuss how liberals are trying to redefine these areas, life, marriage, and gender. And you say that this is the kind of relativism that could actually destroy Western civilization. So some pretty strong words. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, this is, relativism is what lies at the bottom of modern liberalism. And we're talking about modern liberalism. I know that you can trace it back and go to 200 years ago and Thomas Jefferson was a liberal, but I'm not talking about that. I think there are probably some common threads you could find from classical liberalism now, but right now we're dealing with this entity now that we call liberalism, and its primary objective is to reject objective truth, objective morality, even scientific reality, we're seeing is now being rejected, and of course God as well. And once they've sort of cleared all those things out, they create this void in our culture. And what do they put into that void? They put themselves. So they elevate themselves above God, above truth. And now, well, I have my own truth and my own reality and my own morality. And we're seeing how a civilization cannot function that way. It can't function where each individual in the civilization is his own God and has his own truth and his own reality. And that just begets, destruction and chaos. And I think we're seeing that play out.
Oh, we're talking with Matt Walsh, Blaze contributor, also the author of The Unholy Trinity. Matt, one of the reasons your writing appeals to me is because it used to be that the argument between conservatism and liberalism was about the size of government and the role of government in our lives. But it has expanded to so much more, as you've just talked about, where they're what I call tinkering with the DNA of our culture. They're diving into things like marriage and the nature of life and the role of God, rather than just saying, I do believe in God or I don't believe in God. They're putting themselves above God. Do we ever return to sanity? And if so, how do we restore this DNA that they're tinkering with?
Yeah, well, that's a difficult question. I obviously, we know in the long term, when all is said and done, we know that sanity and truth and reason will, and justice and morality and goodness and all those things will win out in the end, when all is said and done. In the meantime, we're never going to live in a perfect culture and in any kind of utopia. We know that. But that doesn't mean that we can't make some progress and that we can't theoretically live in a basically God-fearing country. We did in the past. There have been countries like that in the past, and there still are in the world today, perhaps. So I think it is possible, but what we have to be prepared for and accept is that that's not a goal we're going to achieve in the next 4 years or 5 years or 10 years. That's a generational goal. We got to this point over the course of generations. We lost the culture over the course of generations. And so it stands to reason that if we're going to win it back, that it's going to also take generations to achieve that end.
And what does that fight look like? You know, we have a lot of people of faith who listen to this program. We live in an area with a lot of religious folks who probably would agree with most of what you say in the book. How do they join the fight? How do they feel like they're being part of the solution and not part of the problem?
Well, I think, you know, there are many things we can do in terms of just standing for our beliefs. Well, before we do that, and this is part of the reason I wrote the book, we have to understand what our foundational fundamental principles are and what the most important fights are and rally around those, unite, be galvanized around those issues. And once we've done that, then just in our own lives to stand for those truths anytime we're given the opportunity. I think people are, you know, it's common to hear people say these days that, you know, the two things you're not supposed to talk about in polite company are politics and religion. Those are the things we should be talking about all the time. We should constantly be talking about those things in any situation, anytime we're given the chance. But beyond that, beyond just arguing in favor of it, I think one of the most important things we can do, especially the younger generation, my generation, one of the most important things we can do is, you know, get married, have kids, raise our children, raise our families in the truth, to be fighters for the truth. And that's ultimately how, if this battle is going to be won in any way, that's how it's going to be done. If the newer generations raise God-fearing families. So I know that's not, you know, that's not the quick solution, but I think that is ultimately the solution.
Matt, I know you get a lot of criticism. I read the comments below your column, your writing, and there are even conservatives who say you're too combative, that you're too eager to offend people. Does that wear you down? How do you respond to that criticism?
I would say it wears me down. I'm used to hearing it, and what I would say is first of all, I'm not, my goal is not to offend people just for the sake of offending people. And there's a lot of that. Let's face it. There's a lot of that in the media and in the world of punditry, and especially conservative punditry, I think, or on both ends of the spectrum. There are people who just, all they're really looking to do is just offend and be provocative. And the reason they want to do that is because they want to get attention to themselves.
Yep.
So that they can profit off of it. That is not my goal, to just bring attention to myself. My goal is to bring attention to these issues and to what the proper arguments are and to the truth. And I just happen to believe that we're at a point in our culture where there's so much noise and people are so distracted and so apathetic that the only way that I can see to cut through all that and to get people's attention is to be direct, be loud, and to not worry at all about being polite. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't be compassionate or we can't be loving. But polite and loving are not synonyms. And I'm not, so the being polite, I'm not worried about. If I make people uncomfortable, then I think that I've done my job. They should be uncomfortable. We should all be uncomfortable with where we are in our culture. And so that's the approach I've taken. And I know that that's not the approach that maybe works for everybody, but I do think overall that's the way we need to be as Christians and conservatives in this culture today.
You say it's kind of now or never for conservatives. Do you see, is this like in the next few years could change the course of our nation? I mean, how long do we have to put a stop to this progressive agenda that's kind of pushing us in a direction we don't like?
I don't know what the exact time frame is. I know that on a political and policy and legislative level, we have clearly a 2 to 4 year window to accomplish quite a lot. And if we don't take advantage of it, then I don't know when we're going to get the chance again. I mean, will Republicans still be in charge of essentially the entire government after the midterms, after 2020? I don't know. I tend to doubt it. Doesn't usually work that way. So we have a window on that end that is very small and that we must take advantage of. But then we also have to keep in mind that even if that's taken advantage of to the fullest extent, and we do things like defund Planned Parenthood, which should have been done immediately, should have been done yesterday, we should be doing it immediately. But even if we do all that, then we still haven't won. The culture still isn't ours. We still have, as I say, the long generational game that we have to play. But even there, I say it's still now or never there to begin that process of reclaiming the culture.
We're talking with Matt Walsh. He's the author of The Unholy Trinity, Blocking the Left's Assault on Life, Marriage, and Gender. Matt, last question. I know we only have you here for just another minute or two. And this is the day after we learned Bill O'Reilly's voice is now silenced at Fox News. Maybe talk about the way conservatives speak. And you're part of a team of national conservatives trying to preach conservatism to the country. We lost Bill O'Reilly, but what can this conservative team of people do better? What are we doing right? And if you're the quarterback, what is it that you say to them that we need to do in order to continue to get the conservative message out effectively?
Yeah, it's been an interesting time, but it just seems like these conservative pundits are going down left and right. And listen, I don't know what's true and what isn't in terms of the exact accusations against Bill O'Reilly, but
yeah.
What I would say is that those of us who are, and I'm nowhere near, of course, the level of Bill O'Reilly in terms of prominence and influence and all that, but any of us with an audience, we have an enormous responsibility that's on our shoulders because we have put ourselves in a position of, you know, being the spokesman and defenders of these truths. That's the position we've taken for ourselves. And so we need to live up to the standards that we set for ourselves in our own lives. And it needs to be not just that we're out there arguing in favor of these things, but that we embody these truths. Because if we don't, you know, we know we have enemies, and they're going to be looking for any excuse to take us down, and not just take us down, but discredit our message, which is the worst part. So we need to be, we need to hold ourselves to a very, very high standard and take this responsibility extremely seriously.
All right, Matt Walsh, his book, The Unholy Trinity, Blocking the Left's Assault on Life, Marriage, and Gender. I know it's on Amazon. Matt, you want to point our listeners to any other places they need to go to get the book?
Yeah, you can probably find it at Barnes & Noble, but you can also go to unholytrinitybook.com and find all the different options for buying it there.
All right, unholytrinitybook.com. Matt Walsh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, 8:50. We'll take a break, and we'll be back after this on KID.